nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
Aldous Huxley said, "The great end of life is not knowledge but action." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who take action. Our first playmaker has been in the design industry for 32 years, while our next playmaker has 25 years of consulting experience. With us today is a CEO of an architectural firm that is ranked among the top six, while our other playmaker is president of an IT management consulting firm. These great playmakers are Dan Noble. Dan is president and CEO of HKS Incorporated. And Jeff Farr. Jeff is president of Farr Systems, and we're going to begin today's show with Jeff. Jeff is co-founder and president of Farr Systems and leverages 25 years of IT consulting experience to drive meaningful change for companies. Farr Systems clients benefit from Jeff's understanding of how to effectively align IT organizations with strategic business objectives in order to optimize costs, increase efficiencies, mitigate risks, and improve company performance. Founded in 2006, Farr Systems is a niche management consulting firm that addresses the most strategic technology challenges for corporate enterprises. Jeff, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're an interesting business, which is very popular for businesses these days to kind of pull all their IT together. But before I get into talking about what you do, tell me about your story. How did you get started? How did Farr Systems happen?
Okay, absolutely. Farr Systems is a family business. So my father and I started the business almost 10 years ago. We were on the golf course. I think we were on number 9 at Lakewood, and he was running a food company at the time, and I've been in consulting most of my career, and so I was finishing up a gig, and he said, "You know, I think I'm finally done with a really big corporation, and what do you think about doing something together?" I said, "That's a fantastic idea. Here's the plan. We're going to consult 4 days a week, and then on Fridays we're going to play golf."
Wonderful plan.
That was our plan. And so we started Farr Systems, and the first 2 years we hadn't played golf once. So we just kind of took off, and we both talk about it's the most fun we've ever had professionally.
And you get paid for it, too.
And we get paid for it. So we're just having a ball, and that's really how we got started. We just talked about it, and he was he had some really good experience. He was the CIO of Fina Oil, which was here in Dallas for a long time, for many, many years, and then he was the CIO for Brinks globally. And so we took I was more in the technology space. He had already achieved very high management. And so we put it together, and that's how we came up with we're going to be management consultants in specifically within the IT field.
Well, you have a number of areas you work in. You have interim CIO resources, management consulting, executive education, IT strategy and planning, et cetera. I thought what was interesting on your website, which if you'd like to check it, is farrsystems.com. That's Farr with two R's, FARRsystems.com. The tab that under our services, your IT strategy, mm-hmm. which is a little extensive. Tell us about your IT strategy and how possibly you differ from a lot of other companies that do something similar to what you do.
Right. You know, oftentimes when you hear somebody say, "Look, we're consulting and we're in IT," it's usually a technical bend. They do databases or programming or something like that. Ours is specifically on how do you run IT? How do you provide value for the business? And I can't tell you how many times I hear this over and over and over is when I talk to a CFO, a CEO, the CMO, whatever, they'll say, "You know, I love what the guys are doing in IT. I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I don't want to hear all the technical stuff. I want it to work." And so that really became the basis of our business. It was something we really excelled in. How do you actually provide great service? So we started saying, run IT like a business. What if you had separated IT out and made it become its own business? What would you have? Well, you'd have to describe your services. You'd actually have to cost them out. You'd have to go sell. You'd have to have much more of the interaction side that a business has. And so that really seemed to resonate with many of the executives and some of the CIOs. Some of the CIOs were a little resistant. They wanted to be, they still wanted to be in the technical stack. The problem with that is that nobody really in the business side, nobody really understands it, and they really don't care. They just want it to work. And so that's really where we ended up going into the management space.
Well, I can see why the CIOs might have given you a little pushback because they need to validate their job to be doing something rather than just having you doing it all. Well, what are some of the challenges or topics that, that business owners and top executives are asking you about that you can come and work with them on?
Especially lately in the last few months, you know, Target comes up. Everybody's talking about the fact that such a huge, we call it a data breach. What it really was a theft.
Well, that's been happening with a number of companies. Sally Beauty Supplies, Neiman Marcus, a lot of them have had those breaches.
Yeah, Marshall. But, so there's a lot. But, you know, Target was so big. And basically the CEO lost his job over it and the CIO and so forth. And so I hear that's become much more of a business topic as opposed to you guys be sure we're you know, the data and the IT stuff is secure. That really elevated it. And so I get lots of conversation around security and risk. The other one is cloud. I hear cloud probably every day. And the problem is a lot of people think they know what it is, but they're not exactly sure. You know, what? We're in the cloud. Well, I think we're in the cloud. I'm not sure exactly. And so I'll get questions of what does that mean? Should we go there? There's lots of, there's lots of risks that go
with
that.
And I've been reading a lot about the risks and the breakdown of security in cloud systems too.
Right. And so there's a lot of fear, a lot of unknown. Well, you know, I've heard the term FUD, fear, unknown, certainty, and doubt. So there's a lot around that. Cloud's a very positive thing that is not going away. That is absolutely the future. The way I would have you think about that is if you go back to, let's say, the early part of this century, and you went to a manufacturing plant, that plant oftentimes had their own power generator on site because it was not reliably provided. Well, if you built a plant today, you wouldn't build your own electrical generation. It's too readily available. Cloud computing is the same concept. And so it's going to be provided for you. It'll be fast, reliable, secure. All that stuff will be taken care of. And that's the way of the future.
So when you go in, you're working with them on every aspect. You have a number of people that actually work for you mm-hmm. and do the work. Do you have people on site with the clients you work with?
Right. As consultants, you know, our job is to not be in our office. Our job is to be out with our clients. And so, yes, we work mainly in their offices, sometimes in ours. But that's what happens there. Engagements can be as small as a month, or it could be as long as I've got some clients that it's going on 4 or 5 years. Just depends on what they're trying to do.
Well, IT has grown tremendously over the last, 10, 15 years. I mean, I can still remember back when I got my first email address back in the mid-90s, and it was on the very tip back then.
Yeah.
When you go into companies, do you see that they really don't have an IT plan? They've got a piece here and a piece here, and they're not totally integrated. Do you go in and pull all those together?
Absolutely. So when we're doing strategies, the first thing we want to do is assess where they are. And in any business, like I said, separate IT out, treat it as a business within a business. Well, do you have a business plan? Well, every business has a business plan. Why doesn't IT have its own business plan? And oftentimes they don't. It's like anybody else. They get reactive. Now, the really good IT departments have all this stuff. But oftentimes it's not there, and the first thing we do is do an assessment, then we figure out the plan, and then we start talking about capital and what can the company, how do we do that, and how long does it take? Just like we would allocate if you're going to buy new equipment for your factory. Well, most of the time you can't just go out and purchase all that right away. There's a plan over time. So treat IT's investment, the capital investment in that, just like you would any other investment. in the business.
Interesting way to look at it. Now, one of the things you have is you talk about is a business services catalog. What is that?
So business services catalog, I'm going to give you another analogy. Let's say you're a restaurant, okay? Your business service catalog is basically your menu. So if you go to a CIO right now of a medium to large size company and say, what do? They'll say something like, we animate the business through automation, we provide data, we provide something along those lines. What we actually have them do is actually break down your services. I want you to define them. If you were a restaurant, you would have the different pieces on your menu. I don't want the ingredients. Oftentimes IT talks about the ingredients in a hamburger.
Which gets too detailed.
It's too detailed. Tell me about the hamburger. Tell me what that'll do for me. Tell me how much it costs. Oh, and by the way, you need to know what your cost is to be sure that you're covering and you're making a profit, or in a corporate sense, you just need to be breaking even.
Interesting analogy.
Yeah.
Again, FAR Systems, and it's FARsystems.com. Tell us how listeners or anyone can get a hold of you.
So, like I said, FARsystems.com is the quickest and easiest way, and you can route from there. And our phone number's on there. Location, we're off of the tollway at Keller Springs, and so.
Well, you've been in business now 10 years or so.
About to start our 10th year.
We have many people listening that are entrepreneurs or business owners. Advice, what would you give somebody either starting a business or that's in business to help them become more successful?
So that's a great question. I'm in a group that is one of the things I would do is I would join an organization that supports entrepreneurs. So I have a group, it's my forum, and there's 10 of us, sometimes 11, depending on different members.
And it's a great group, brother.
It's a great, yeah. And so that is the most helpful group that I have. But the thing I would do is, there's a book called The E-Myth. I don't know if you've talked about it on your show or not, but The E-Myth is, although I don't really like the writing that much, the lessons in that book are invaluable. And here's basically what they say. Oftentimes, entrepreneurs go into entrepreneurship because they know how to do something. So I knew technology backwards and forwards. So I went into the technology space. The problem is, doing technology has nothing to do with running a business. So oftentimes you're doing, but there is no management and there is no the other side of it. So what we had when we went in was really good corporate experience and high-level management. So we had that piece covered. We knew how to do what we did. What we didn't have is how to run a small business. And so learning that, and then, of course, the other one's cash flow. If you're a small business, cash flow is, even if you're not a small business, even if you're a medium or large business, cash flow matters. And I didn't really understand how important that was until we got going.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. I'm sorry I have to cut you off with that, but interesting topic all about IT. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break. Don't go away. But when we come back, we're going to have the president and CEO of HKS, which is an architectural, not only an architectural design firm, but a leading architectural design firm, with Dan Noble, who is the president and CEO. We're going to be back right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple, to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein, and our second guest is Dan Noble. Dan is president and CEO of HKS Incorporated, and he's responsible for directing the 27-office, 1,000-person firm. HKS Incorporated is a leading architectural design firm ranked among the top six architectural engineering firms, according to Building Design and Construction magazine. Since its founding in 1939, HKS has completed construction projects totaling more than $84 billion in more than 1,500 cities located in 84 countries. Dan, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm interested in your business because it has been around for a long time. I know that you were not with them in 1939.
This is true.
A little less time. But you started out at North Dakota State, and you ended up here in Dallas. Tell us about your journey from North Dakota to Dallas.
Well, I graduated from North Dakota State in a recession. It was 1983, and there was a national recession. But particularly hard hit was the Midwest, and I'm actually born. I'm a Chicago boy, born in Chicago, and mom went to Northwestern, met dad. Dad came home from World War II, met mom. He went to Northwestern on the GI Bill. Mom came from South Dakota, met dad at Northwestern, started a family, and then moved back to South Dakota. Then from South Dakota, I went to school up in North Dakota, closest architecture. This was the recruiting we did back then. That was the closest architecture school to where I grew up, and I knew I wanted to be an architect. So anyway, we went through architecture school, graduated, tried to get a job back in Chicago, and there were no jobs. There was a group of us, and we probably went to 70 architecture firms, and there were no jobs. So we painted a couple of houses to get some more money, came down to most of the people that were in this group went to Dallas, but I went down to Houston. So I first went down to Houston in 82. This was the winter of 82. And
so you're still in school at the time.
I said 83. I came to Dallas in 83, but first I went to Houston. Yeah. The recession of the oil recession hit Houston right after I got there. So I had a job with an architect for about 9 months, and then that firm folded. So I was laid off. I was living with my brother, and I took a job with Pappas's, the restaurant family, at the Strawberry Patch restaurant on Westheimer, and had heck of a lot of fun for about 7 months, and then thought I got to get back into architecture. So I came up, I heard they're hiring up in Dallas, came up to Dallas, had 7 job interviews and 7 offers, and I didn't know any firm at all.
It wasn't much of a recession for you if you had 7 offers out of 7 interviews.
You know, Dallas, this was in 83 now, and Dallas had a little bit of a
it was a little bit behind Houston.
Yeah, right. And it was before the savings and loan debacle, so it had that window where it was really building a lot. And it built a lot of spec office buildings and a lot of commercial work. So HKS was doing a lot of commercial work, and I didn't know any firm in Dallas. So I went to the AIA office and looked for firms that had won the most design awards, just knowing I wanted to work in a quality firm. And HKS was one of the firms at the top. I interviewed, had a great interview. We went up, we were at the Plaza of the Americas. We went up to the club on top of the Plaza of the Americas. And yeah, that was 1983, got the job, and been there ever since.
Well, I want to ask you more about, and we're talking about HKS and your philosophy now that you're CEO. But let's go back to when you, before you got into college, you said you wanted to get into an architectural school. How young were you when you decided that architectural design was where you wanted to go?
Yeah, very young. I was probably 13.
And what happened? What was there something specific that happened in your life that caused you?
It was just, so I grew up in a town of 25,000 people. So there's not a lot of building, not a lot of, there's renovation and there was street construction. And I would just, if I caught wind of something being built in town, I'd drive my bike to it and just watch them. Just, the idea of something, being formed from nothing or something being made better, that whole idea of transformation as a kid really attracted me. We did a little renovation in our basement. The first project I ever did, I was in sixth grade, and we had a cistern in our basement. And my brother, who was a few years older, wanted his own bedroom, and we didn't have any space but the cistern. So I did some drawings and figured out a way to get a platform bed and his desk and his dresser under the bed, under the platform, designed it, went out, bought the lumber, built it, and that was my first project, again, about sixth grade. So it was, you know, it was just the idea of craft, building something caught my attention at an early age.
Well, you must have been extremely motivated at that age, too, to do something, to take on a project like that, because that was no small project like yourself.
Yeah, I look back in it, and I think that now, but at the time, it just seemed like something interesting to do.
Well, sometimes when we're that young, we're a little naive, not
exactly
knowing what we're going into, and we just do
right.
It. Well, you've been with HKS since 1983. You were named CEO the beginning of this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
So you started as CEO in January. But it sounds like you have a philosophy of people. From reading in the Dallas Business Journal, you said the greatest strength is in its intellectual capital.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you get that philosophy, and what are you going to do with that now that you're a CEO?
Well, you know, we're a service-based group, right? As architects, we supply a service, and that's not a commodity. But more and more in today's world, things like that are treated as a commodity. In other words, some clients are just looking for the lowest fee and to get a product for that lowest fee. But we don't have a product. We have intellectual capital. We have our brains. And I tell our people that, you know, particularly the young people, that really all you have to offer is, you know, what's on your shoulders, is how you think and what you bring to the office each day. So my goal for the firm is to be recognized as being leaders in innovation and in being smart about how we do our work and how we can be allies in the business at hand for whatever our clients are doing, whether that's a sports stadium like the Cowboys or a hospital or a hotel. We're in particular sectors that have a business model, so we need to know that business model. If we're just people that are designing pretty looking things, that can be somewhat commoditized. Now, I don't think design can be commoditized, but the whole, you know, production aspect of it can, which is why you see, you know, firms outsourcing some of the downstream activity to places that do that less expensively. So my goal is that we become these leaders, thought leaders, as people have coined it. It's a little overused term, but people that actually help our clients do their work better. The capital cost for a project will be eclipsed by the operational cost in most of our types of projects in about 7 years. So the capital cost is really fractional. The big play, the big savings, our real value to the clients, to our clients, is how we can save them money year after year after year for the 50-plus life cycle of that project.
Well, you said in the Dallas Business Journal, I say you should draft the most talent. That reminded me of a quotation from Bobby Knight. And he said, I'd rather have a player with 100% desire and 50% ability than the other way around.
Yeah.
Apparently, you want that raw talent, and you can teach them what to do.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're looking for in future talent.
Right, absolutely. We have, you know, that's kind of like the old Cowboys. Usually, the Dallas Cowboys used to, like, draft the best talent, not by position. And that's what I say. I also say, you know, you can't teach height. It's easier to teach a halfback how to block than a lineman how to run the 40 in 4-2. What you want to do is get that talent and teach them some of the technical things. Then you've got people who are interchangeable. I also don't want to pigeonhole people into a myopic silo where this is all they do. And no, Toyota found this, that if somebody was just working on the assembly line and all they were doing were putting doors on every day, every hour of every day, mistakes cropped up. So they would rotate people around so people got to see, oh, we're building a car here. Today I'm doing the door, tomorrow I'm doing the dashboard, but I'm building a car. And if you take that idea and think about an architecture firm, you know, rather than have somebody just do front-end design work or back-end implementation or go out in the field, hire somebody that has the talent and the flexibility to do all of those things and see the entire process. You're going to have a more gratified person, a more fulfilled person and a better product.
Well, you mentioned some of the projects you've had. That includes AT&T Stadium, UNT Stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium. So sports is a big part of what you do. But tell us about some of the projects you've had, some of the big projects you've gotten involved in that were kind of fun.
Well, you know, there's of course, AT&T Stadium is probably our most well-recognized, and that's a project that working with the Jones family and understanding that what we want to do here, again, this is getting back to that business model where it's not a football stadium. It's an events palace, if you will, that can hold some kind of event 365 days a year.
I would guess they probably use that for more non-football activities.
Absolutely do. Yeah, absolutely do. You know, in any kind of sports venue, what we're looking to do is how do you leverage that stroke of building that, designing and building that facility to do more than that through the course of the year. You know, things in the hotel industry, we do work with Disney, we do work with Four Seasons. I believe it's true that we've done more Four Seasons than any firm in the world. And, you know, what you learn from how to create a guest experience when there's frenetic activity going on behind the scenes to make that service seem so, you know, seamless and effortless. The hospitals, you know, we depending on which year, will be number one, two, or three in terms of square footage design for hospitals, healthcare, and that's another kind of thing where you got to create a healing environment, an environment that supports the caregivers, but also recognizes that there's family members, there's a patient, so that separation of service and public traffic and keeping all that organized and separated is a tremendous functional exercise. So it's, for me, it's not so much individual projects, but it's sort of this methodology and this idea of understanding business, understanding how you work with people. All of these projects take years, right? We're going to work with this client for sometimes 3 or 4 years. So that whole idea of process, how do you solve problems? How do you conflict resolution. There's always going to be conflict, particularly when these are prototypes. You know, any project we do, it's a one-off. I mean, there's some things that are similar, but the site's different. The factors the variables that play into the solution are all different. So every project is a one-off. So there's going to be issues. So to me, I kind of like that part of it. I like the part of the aspect that there's going to be problems, and that's where the challenge is. How do you solve those problems?
To me, it's the creativity. It's bringing that creativity to something different to every single project.
Exactly, and that's how you got to look at it. If you look at it as a problem, you're sunk. If you look at it as look at it as a bad problem, you're sunk. If you look at it as a creative problem, then you've got something you can sink your teeth into.
Well, Dan, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. Your website, I believe, is HKSinc.com.
HKSinc.com.
Yep. Good. Thank you very much for being on Playmakers Talk Show. Fascinating from both of our guests. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This has been a great show. Thank you all very much for joining us. Glad we had two great guests on the show. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. And we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.